we're continuing to work our way through John chapter 5. Remember the episode where Jesus healed that man who had been crippled a long time, and he healed him on a Sabbath, so it became a point of controversy with the authorities. And then Jesus, in response to their accusations, starts this long, kind of overwhelming discourse on his relationship with the Father and on how much testimony there is on his behalf and on what condition they're in. I said yesterday that it was something like a teacher trying to, you know, explain to a four-year-old World War II or something like that. It was something way over the head of the child. I thought of it afterwards. That wasn't really a very good analogy, because World War II doesn't mean anything to a child because it's a past event. What came to me later was, what if you were in a war zone like in Ukraine and you had to pick up your children and flee your home? What would you say to the child? The child would be saying, I want to stay, I want to play with my stuffed animals, I want to go to school or whatever. And the parents would be saying, no, I'm going to save your life, I'm going to get out of here before the bombs fall on us. So the child can't understand that, but it's a real situation that it's not just a past event that you could learn about. It's a battle zone. And that's, I think, closer to what Jesus is doing when he's explaining his mission from the Father. He's trying to rescue people who are in real danger. So it's not just a theory or a historical a teaching. This is a rescue mission. It goes way over the head of the Jews that he's speaking to. He knows that will happen, but he's planting seeds. He's trying every possible way to reach them. Now, in today's section of this chapter 5, Jesus speaks about the different testimonies or different elements that testify on his behalf. He says, I don't need human testimony, but I have this divine testimony in addition to John the Baptist. I've got the works of the Father, I have the words of the Father and the scriptures. And then he says, but you won't accept that. You don't really accept the scriptures. You don't really accept what has already been given. And that's why you can't really accept me or find life from me. It's quite a strong indictment that he gives to his listeners. But then, after all these rather strong criticisms, you don't have the love of God in your heart, you don't listen to the word, you don't understand the scriptures, all these things, then he says, but I'm not going to accuse you. He's been accusing them for verses. He says, I'm not going to accuse you. I'm not going to be the one to accuse you. The one to accuse you is Moses. So suddenly he drops Moses on them. And remember, they're the ones who are preserving the heritage of Moses. These are the experts in the law of Moses, and they're defending Moses from guys like Jesus who are breaking the law. So it's almost funny, maybe ironical might be a better word than funny, that they're accusing him of violating the law of Moses, and he turns around and says, well, Moses is the one who is going to accuse you. Now, this is John's gospel, so there's always many levels to what's being revealed here. When Jesus mentions Moses, it's a packed word. It's not just a guy from a long time ago. Moses represents the whole tradition of the law. He also is the lawgiver, or the intermediary of God, who used Moses to give the law to his people. But he's also an intercessor, a mediator on behalf of the people. So Moses is a huge figure. And when Jesus says, well, Moses will accuse you, he's marshaling all this meaning of the term Moses. This is sometimes referred to as the Moses Mass. Maybe you know that expression. Thursday of the fourth week is the Moses Mass, because Moses is in the gospel and Moses is in the first reading. Goes down to deal with the people who have gone off to worship the golden calf, and Moses is at the center of the psalm as well. So So it's time for us to reflect a little bit on Moses. Now, if we were to take this gospel and hear Jesus say, Moses is the one to accuse you, we might first think, oh, the commandments or the laws. Jesus is saying his listeners are not following the law because Moses is the lawgiver. But the liturgy helps us with this. Instead of taking a first reading in which Moses is presented as lawgiver, we get a first reading, this is Exodus 32, where Moses is presented as an intercessor. And this I think helps us understand what Jesus is saying to the Jews. He's not saying you're not following the law. He's saying you're not accepting the intercessor. You're not accepting the one who is pleading before God on your behalf. That was Moses' role, and even more, it's Jesus' role. So it's not enough simply to have a bunch of laws presented to you and then you write them down and memorize them or teach them. There's a need for someone to take your side. And this is Moses. This first reading is really a beautiful one. You know the story. Moses is up on the mountain. The people are down at the base of the mountain, and they become depraved. They really lose their way. They almost lose their sanity. They come up with this molten calf, and they start worshiping the calf. And then there's this dialogue between God and Moses, which. So again, I don't want to use the word funny because it's not a comedy, but there's something very funny about this, that God is the one who says, you, Moses, you're the one who led these people out of Egypt, and now look what's happening to them. I'll just get rid of them. We'll start all over. And then Moses turns around and says, well, you're the one who led them out of Egypt. These are your people, and don't wipe them out. God says, well, I can make a great people out of you. And Moses says, no, you know, work with these people that you've already chosen. Otherwise, your name is going to get a bad reputation among the other nations. it's all kind of funny. Who's taking the side of the people here? Well, it's not as if God is against his own people and Moses has to convince God to love his people. Where did Moses get that idea in the first place? He got it from God. Moses knows God. He's a man after the heart of God. He's the representative of God. Moses, who knows that God's heart is for his people. That's why Moses can so readily say, don't do that. why should your just wrath lead to the destruction of your own people? That's not your style. And God says, oh yeah, you're right. It's almost as if God says, I forgot, you're right, I'm merciful. I'm not going to let justice crush everybody. Well, it's really, God gives Moses this intercessory role. He lets Moses in on the secret that he's not against his people, even though they are depraved, even though they're committing the worst of sins, idolatry, blasphemy, and they're really in a mess. And they deserve to be wiped out. Yes, that's justice. But God doesn't want to wipe them out. And so he inspires Moses to stand in the way, stand in the breach. It's a way of revealing how the justice of God is still preserved. And at the same time, it doesn't come against the very people he's trying to save. It's a very profound reading, this passage where God and Moses are as if they're in the opposite position, as if God is the bad guy and Moses is the good guy. But what it also does is it prepares the way for the real lawgiver, the real mediator, that is Jesus Christ. What is Jesus' role when the Father sends him? What does the Father want him to do? Well, he doesn't want him to condemn his own people. He wants him to take their place and intercede at the throne of the Father. Well, if the Father doesn't want to crush us, why does he have to send his son? Because justice still has to be maintained. Someone has to plead on behalf of the guilty so that they can receive mercy. Someone has to take their place, and that's Jesus. This is where we're going in Lent, and Jesus is going to take our place on the cross. That's why Jesus really stresses to the Jews in this gospel how critical it is that they accept him, that they accept the testimony that is on his behalf, because he's the one, he's the answer, he's the way. If you can't accept me, you don't have a way to be saved. So that's why he puts it like this, and he uses Moses as a kind of springboard, as a precursor. There was a passage, I think it's in Numbers, where Moses says near the end of his life, God will raise up a prophet like me. God will raise up a prophet like me. I know a new Moses is going to come sometime in the future. Moses knew it, but that's Jesus. He comes as the new Moses, with an even greater law and with an even greater intercessory mediating role, even more effective in overcoming the demands of justice, even more effective in revealing the boundless mercy of the Father. And that's a great thing to ponder, a great thing to celebrate.